Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Business Munchies, where we munch on some business ideas. We have a guest with us today, Rishabh from Pepper Content. Rishabh, why don't you give us a 10-second introduction and then we'll dive right into the first idea.
Hi guys, I'm Rishabh and I co-founded Pepper Content with Anirudh back in 2017 in our second year of college. Graduated last year with a degree and a Series A funding from Lightspeed. We are now a team of 70 folks, you know, trying to build and disrupt how content is created in general across markets, and we hope to be a global company very soon.
That's amazing. So what's your first idea, Rishabh?
Cool. So I think the most common 23-year-old problem, verified blind dates, right? So Tinder isn't working for us, guys. You know, I think that's a problem. Either it's not working for me and my friends, or it's not working in general. So I'll just assume it's not working in general. I would go on a limb and say that Tinder needs to up its game and actually get into the dating game rather than just the facilitating game, right? My idea was, why not launch a verified blind date service? Like a KYC agent, people will come to your house, verify you that you are a real legit human being. And then all the folks that will be, you know, on that marketplace get tied up to an algorithm or whatever that is. And if they just meet up on a date, I think that will be a way better experience and use case for Tinder.
I am just imagining this Tinder KYC agent coming to your house and being like, okay, Rishabh, okay, you are actually male, tick mark. You are actually 23, tick mark. Okay, for that itself, I think we should fund this idea. So I just want to get back to why is Tinder so unsuccessful for most guys, right? And this is a problem for all marketplaces where the product is heterogeneous, which means that each person is different. So that means the people who are really good, like the guys who are at the top 1%, get 90% of the dates, and 99% of the guys get 10% of the dates. And that happens in any market that is heterogeneous. It even happens in podcasting. The top 1% of podcasts do really well, and everybody else is just like,
I think even in the creator economy, right? Content creators in general, there was a brilliant article by Legion which spoke about the content creator middle class. Right now, most of the money that's going to the creator economy is like probably in the top 10% or something.
Right. I think I read that article. It was also in HBS, you know, the need for creating a middle class in the creator economy. I think the similar is the need for the Tinder boy segment, right? And I think it's also a supply demand. I think the number of boys on the platform are way higher than the number of girls in India, at least. So I don't know if that's true or not, but I think I can make that claim on this podcast.
So the verified blind dates thing is actually pretty interesting. And I know one company that's trying to do that. There's a company called Sirf Coffee, which basically says that, hey, we're going to give you the name, some very like the first name, not even the last name. I'm not going to tell you like which colleges or companies that this person works at. And I'm going to give you some little bio. And then you just jump on a call, or if you're in the same city, you just go directly meet them. And their idea there is all of this info beforehand actually does nothing, right? Like does really no value add. Just go meet the person and see if you vibe. And if you vibe, then you take the conversation forward. If you don't, you let it be.
If you vibe, make her your wife. That's the tagline.
No, I think, you know, I think the whole psychology here is that there's, you know, there's a lot of inertia in people to just go meet someone that they don't know, right? They are not in their comfort zone. And that's why even if you get a match, so let's say on an off chance you get a match, right? You find reasons as to why you don't want to meet that person, right? You are like, either the chatting style is not good, the background is not good, and all of that. You have that prejudices in your mind already, right? I think, you know, getting on a call just changes all of that, because, you know, that apart from everything else, that vibe thing that you mentioned, said, right, that becomes predominant, right? That becomes the most important part of how I see you as a person, right? And if I vibe with you, I don't care if you go to an MIT or a Manipal, like whatever that is, right? So I think that's very important.
There was another company that I saw in the UK that started, which was very interesting, which is called Thursday or something. I think that's the name of the app. They basically saying you spend way too much time on these dating apps for way little output. We're going to combine all of that into one day. So Thursday is the only day that app will work. Technically, you'll get the match. You'll get one match. You get to talk, and then you meet that person in the evening, that same evening. Done. right? One match every Thursday, something along those lines. So the point I'm trying to get to, I think, and we've heard this from multiple people, that that entire current slew of dating apps, which is just swiping and matching and talking, I think that evolution is happening or will happen in the very near future, I think.
I think that's a great idea. And why I think so? Because it leads to consolidation of people. So there's a marketplace, right? So there's a Tinder marketplace, right? There are boys and girls. So if I come on a Monday and I'm not a regular user, right? And even if I get matched and probably say I have notifications off, I won't come to know about it till Sunday, right? What happens because of consolidation, right? Everyone is online at the same moment. And whatever happens, happens in real time. And when you give someone the, less time to think about it, they are quicker to make a decision, right? So they're like, okay, let's do it. I think that's why it will be probably the chances of they actually end up meeting will be higher because, you know, you are in a pressure situation. You mujhe aaj hi milna hai, it's over. And I think that that works brilliantly. I think that's a great idea. Yeah.
This is something that we've spoken about so many different dating app ideas on this show.
The irony though is Sahil and I have never used a dating app. So we've never really used any of these dating apps. We were married before or we were with our future wives before these dating apps sort of came about. Funny that we are discussing how what the next dating evolution should be.
I was first in Pilani. So Pilani doesn't have a base out of Pilani campus. Right? It's a village, right? And after that, you were in Pep and then the lockdown hit. So I haven't been able to actually use it anywhere, but I know I'll face these similar problems. So I am just vouching for my guys here.
The basic point of it is that the way dating apps are run right now needs to change. And there's going to be some kind of evolution. Who knows what actually happens. But Bumble just made that lady a billionaire. I'm sure the Tinder people are also billionaires.
Yeah, I mean, Match.com, dude. They own pretty much all the dating properties that are out there on the internet.
It's a 45 billion conglomerate, right?
Sorry, quick question. Also, by the way, you should hear the story of how Match.com was founded. It's a very interesting story. But why do you think these dating apps are not working? What is the basic problem?
I think they're not working in India. I think as far as my reading goes, right, the dating culture in India is very new. Right, there hasn't been a dating culture. Right? It's either you are single or either you're committed. Right, there's no in between in general. And I was discussing this with a friend. Right, dating as a thing where you talking to a person. You know, I think that is something that is new and people are still getting accustomed to it. And you will only find this in metro cities, right? In Mumbai or in Delhi, right? And I think that's why it's not working because at the end of it, most people migrate to Mumbai. So if I'm in a small town, I'm in a tier 2 city and I move to Mumbai or I move to Bangalore, right? Although I see this, whole phase of, people talking to random strangers and thinking whether they could date, that's a new concept for me and I'll have inertia to do that. I think that's, I think it's a big cultural thing. You know, people that are out there, in the sense in the US or Europe market that I know, right? They say that Tinder and all these, they work fabulously because they both sides, right? The boys and the girls, both are very open to these kind of experiences there. And we aren't. So I think that's one reason that they haven't been able to make a mark in India.
So this is also why Jeevan Sathi and Shaadi.com, they do well in India, but these other ones, they don't do as well. Okay, fair enough. Do you want to discuss anything more on this, Siddharth, or should we move on?
Let's go to the next idea.
Okay, let's do it. Siddharth, your idea. What do you have?
So I was going through trying to figure out how to learn blockchain. Like, how do I read more about it? How do I learn more about it? And I realized that over the last few years, a bunch of interesting courses have been created on blockchain. At the same time, I got an email from ISB saying that, hey, as an alum, you can join some of the courses and you can sort of audit these courses for lifelong learning program or something like that. And I got curious and I checked some of these courses and I was pleasantly surprised that they had actually made some interesting new additions to the course to keep it relevant to the current times. And that's when I realized that what if colleges actually go out and buy course creators, right? These internet course creators just go out and buy them because colleges don't have the time and bandwidth to work on cutting edge courses and really try to figure out what should go in there. But a lot of these course creators have actually worked on these technologies, taken a bet that this might or might not work, whatever, they've taken a bet and they've created courses that are wildly popular now. What if you could just go and buy these creators and say that, hey, we already have the distribution, obviously, And we'll, you know, give you more resources to improve the coursework, work with other professors and stuff like that. Some examples that come to my mind, blockchain for business applications, ISB should just buy out a couple of course creators. Bits or IITs should look into buying out some space tech courses, right? Like be helping people understand what are the opportunities in space tech, what is the technology behind it, a lot of those things. And these could be primer individual one course that you do just to give like an idea of what's possible to the students, and then they can sort of use the internet to go beyond that. But I thought this is something that colleges should try to just stay ahead of the times.
Even something as basic as SEO, colleges don't teach SEO. While you might go to an MBA for marketing, I don't think you're going to do a very hands-on, like make your own website kind of SEO thing, right? So for example, Neil Patel is like this very famous digital marketing guy on the internet. What if you could find somebody maybe smaller than him, have that person teach the course, and then yeah, do a hands-on thing on digital marketing and SEO.
You know, I think very interesting said, you know, I'll give you an example. And this is a shameless plug. So we did create courses at PepperCon. We created courses for a university. I won't take the name, but we did like MA, BA courses, created written books for them, right? The only problem there is, you know, people are only still creating courses for existing subjects, right? You know, so if there's a history or there's an economics or there's a finance, they'll go on and create new course structures. They'll update it if there's a new finding or something. For courses like crypto or for, say, for IoT or whatever that is, right? I think platforms like Upgrad are doing amazing job, right? So we work with Upgrad, you know, they are one of our largest clients. So, you know, they do this extensively, right? So how they, anything and everything that's trending, that's new, that's, you know, should be taught, Upgrad tries to get their hands on it, right? And, you know, talking about Neil Patel, right? I think that's a very good example, because leave space tech or leave SEO, even something as small as Excel, I think that is one skill that everyone needs to have, right? That's a non-negotiable skill for me. Personally, I think that even if you don't know, you should learn it as quickly as possible. And college, may there's no course about it. There's no nothing about it, right? So I think that's an interesting insight. Building on that only, I think one idea that I had was a marketplace for guest lecturers. I'll tell you about Bits. So whenever we wanted to have a guest lecturer come in, students reached out to 10 folks. All 9 of them said no, 1 of them said yes, and then we tried to do according to their whims, right? And but there are folks that would love to give a guest lecture, but people don't know that how to reach them or whether they should reach them or not, right? Imagine a marketplace where, say, we list both of you as podcasting folks, right? And people reach out and say that, would you love to do a podcast? And they are, whatever the commercials or whatever the engagement is, we can specify that on the marketplace. So I know approaching Sahil, I'll need to pay this or I'll need to do this, instead of me striking a conversation, then seeing whether they're interested or not, and then seeing whether, you know, we want it or not. Similarly, say on entrepreneurship, on whatever that, I am pretty sure we'll get so many folks wanting to talk about it. It will solve a lot of problems.
What we'll also do is a quality problem can be solved, because as people get more engagement, they'll obviously get reviews or something like that. So you really know if guest lecturers can add value to the students, and then just call those people.
Exactly, exactly.
So two things I want to add. Number one, the difference between Upgrad and doing it in a college. While Upgrad, you can get a certificate. The problem that I often face is that I see these on LinkedIn or whatever. You see these people who have this certificate, I have this certificate, I have this certificate. The problem is I don't know the quality of that. While with a college, I know that there will be some kind of QC metric that they will have, there will be some kind of examination, there will be some kind of checking. That, and plus, also on top of that, there's signaling that if this is at this college, there is going to be of a certain quality.
Even for colleges, right? Just on the point that you mentioned, this is a great way to combat what Upgrad is doing, right? In the sense that you can't go out and build courses at their speed, or, you know, because they've mastered that art potentially and they have the distribution. Instead, just go out and do micro acquisitions of these courses, right? Just say that, hey, come work for us. I think Unacademy did it really well, where they just bought out a bunch of these, you know, educators,
YouTube channels,
right?
Yeah.
Because these guys already have some sort of distribution. They know exactly what to teach. Just take them and put our brand behind them. So
I think that's a very, very great example. I think there was a channel called Handa Ka Funda, which was very, very popular. I wasn't aware. I did not go through it in my...
He's a maths teacher. He's huge on YouTube.
Exactly. And when I got to know about the acquisition, I read about it. And I was blown away with how much popularity, how much fan following that person has. And that simple acquisition would probably give such a great ROI to an academy. I think that's a good way to look at it. But I think that's the problem, right? Colleges are stuck in their old ways. And I think if they want to learn, there's a lot to learn from companies like an academy, Baidu's, or, you know, that's the problem. They don't want to move.
So one of the growth pivots that Siddharth and I thought about for our podcast was approaching colleges and like going through the whole ESL and all that stuff in colleges, right? We have realized that colleges are a tough nut to crack. They, like you said, they don't want to change. We've talked to so many professors and stuff like that. It's just very difficult to get them to change, to get them to do different things. So I completely agree with you on that.
Just to add, colleges and big enterprises are designed to say no. Anything new that any person takes in that, you know, institution has to be explained by them to 30, 40, 50 other people on why they are doing it, right? So they're designed to say no. And if you're going to sell something to them, be aware of that fact that you're breaking that no. You want to break that no as soon as possible.
Now, going back to the guest lecture marketplace, love the idea. In fact, we have spoken to a couple of people who focus on guest lecturing. So they have a large network of people of really fancy names, they told us. But they individually contact them and they get them to wherever that person needs to go. So it was all based on the founder's network. But what you are saying, if they could just get all those people's name onto a marketplace, they could just go there and you could just purchase 1 hour of their time. That's a much more efficient way of doing this. So while you were talking, I Googled it also. I found one person who does it. It's called Flexi Tutor. It seems very focused on doing it for universities, but it seems it's exactly what you said. It's a marketplace for experts, yeah, for teachers.
I think, you know, and marketplace for experts, it's not that difficult, to be honest, right? So there's already marketplaces that exist for all kind of services, right? What you want to now do is benchmark them on a very certain quality. Above this, say, if I'm a guest lecturer, I need to have, say, 5 years of experience or a 10 year of experience or a certain diploma or a certain course, right? So I think that's the tough thing. You know, how do you create that benchmark? But I think...
I think also what you'll have to do is you'll have to divide it as per levels. Like the super high level ones, it might have to be a personal touch point between the founder and that person. Then the mid-level ones, maybe not so much. And the low-level ones, it can just be a pure marketplace, right? That's one way to do it. Okay, cool. Let's move on to the next idea. I think that is yours, Rishabh. What do you have?
Cool. I was thinking of subscription for tap beer, you know, alcohol delivery in general. So I was post Pilani. Pilani is a very restricted village. We had only one or two places where we could go eat. Then going to Mumbai, I got this exposure to a whole new different world of tap beers and breweries and, you know, all those fancy stuff. And I was like, this is crazy. But suddenly I realized that there's not easy way to access it. Like, I cannot get that at home, right? And I said, if I am drinking on a weekend, right, I probably want to drink a tap beer. But how do I get it? And that's why I think of subscription, right? So if I subscribe, every weekend someone delivers me that tap beer. So you're like, just like grocery does for Big Basket or Grofers, I think. And I think that's an idea I wanted to discuss. What's your take on that, guys? I think you are way more experienced in this segment, so I love your take.
Wow, are you calling us drunkards?
No, it's a luxury that only you Bombay people can come up with, of like just getting tap beer delivered to your place. Bombay is by far, I think, as far as I know, except Jharkhand maybe, is the only place they actually allowed for alcohol delivery during the pandemic, which is a great sign from a regulation perspective.
And it was a very specific type of alcohol delivery. You could only deliver from growler stations, and you could only deliver like, I think, 1 liter bottles or something like that. And only beer, not alcohol.
No. You can get whiskey and hard liquor delivered.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can get that from your local wine shop. That's true.
Yeah.
Wait, so Siddharth, that means you can't get stuff from your wine shop also delivered?
No.
What?
Yeah, no.
I didn't realize we had it so well in Bombay. Okay, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I've been in Gurgaon, I've been in Bangalore and all of these places. Gurgaon, to a certain extent, does it, but you don't want to trust people in Gurgaon. Okay, I have to narrate the story here. the wine shops in Gurgaon, or actually the people in Gurgaon, came up with this fantastic scam. You know how Google has all these locations for different wine shops and whatnot. When you Google to say, where are the wine shops? You can claim that listing and say, here's the phone number, right? You can just say, this is the phone number. And the internet generation are basically, the generation would love to just pick up Google, look at the wine shop, call them and say, I want this, this, this. So you're calling a random number. This person would pick up and be like, yeah, for sure. We'll deliver it. You just have to pay in advance. They will pay them and they will just switch off the phone. That's it. It's a pretty simple, easy scam. Like you were never talking to an alcohol delivery shop or whatnot. But the point I'm trying to make is it's so unregulated. It's not easy, even in locations where it's possible. It's not easy to just get alcohol home delivered. I would love it. I love the idea of getting tap beer home delivered every single weekend, or, you know, I could decide the frequency, but regulations.
Okay. While Siddharth was narrating that amazing story, I went to my fridge and I got something for my fridge, which I got many months ago during the lockdown. So this kind of exists. It's called Tapped Flight. And they do a curious case of bottled beers and swinging growlers. Okay. So basically you sign up, you select a subscription, and yeah, you just get like weekly or monthly.
What's a growler?
A growler is like a 1 liter bottle.
Just a bigger beer bottle.
Exactly. That's basically what it is.
That's a fancy name for a beer bottle.
But yeah, I mean, so I'm looking at the poster right now and it's saying India's first beer subscription program. I don't know if it still exists. Actually, you know what? Why don't you guys discuss? Let me check on the website if it still exists.
So from a regulation perspective, I think what happens is you need black swan events to create some of these regulations, unfortunately. And I've realized that once these regulations come into picture, it's hard to take them back. So in my mind, I think Bombay is going to stick around even post-pandemic. This beer delivery, alcohol delivery is going to stick around. And I think other cities are hopefully going to take a note and sort of implement something.
Okay, so I went to tappedflight.com. Number one, it's only for Bombay and Pune. So sorry about it, guys. Number two, they have a subscription model and they have a buy it now model. So they do it. And I'm just looking at what subscriptions they have. 2,300 a month and you get 4 liters of beer per month. I think that's the problem, is the regulation. I was talking to one of our listeners and he worked for some really large alcohol company. I'm not going to name them because Siddharth told me not to. And I was just talking to him and he said that this company is going to throw away hundreds and hundreds of kegs of beer in Bombay because of the lockdown, because they're not allowed to do delivery and they're not allowed to do delivery of their other products as well. So I guess their wine shops, it's fine, but a lot of big brands are kind of suffering right now. It seems like it at least. Anyway. This is a good idea. Some people are already implementing it, but regulation is going to be the big problem in the rest of India. Should we move on to the next idea? Siddharth, go for it.
So this is all pre-pandemic. I used to go to the cult gym centers, which is the gyms for under the CureFit brand, right? I was very interesting customer experience where open the app, decide which class you want to go to and just book those classes. There was strength and conditioning. There was yoga. There was TRX and just different stuff, right? And as somebody who's not like a particular like goal of 12 weeks, 13 weeks from a gym program, I used to just do different kinds of exercises just to stay fit. Cut to today, I've been talking to a few parents who, because this is summer vacation going on, everybody is trying to figure out in that FOMO of like, how do I figure out like different kinds of summer classes for my kids, right? Writing and, you know, science and Vedic maths and all kinds of different stuff. And a ton of funding has happened in this sector from an online sort of extracurricular perspective. I'm actually not very bullish on that post-pandemic. I actually think the extracurricular activities need to be done in a group of people in a physical setting. So here's what I was thinking. The exact same model, cult gyms sort of a model where multiple different classes are going on and you could book technically whatever class you want to go to. By doing that, the kids and the parents don't have FOMO of missing out on like a particular class. You can try out a bunch of things and decide if you want to go deeper into something. Then you can go on to join their intermediate section where you have to do it for 12 weeks or something like that. Just do a mix and match of different programs, but give them the flexibility of doing all kinds of different programs under one center. that's how I was thinking about it I mean, 100% only works post pandemic.
Got it. I think it's, you know, interesting idea, and I also think that, you know, I'm not very bullish on the online thing post pandemic, because, you know, any creative pursuit needs a creative setup, and that creative setup happens only when you're physically in touch, right? But I think the problem.
One more point before you say that, before you mention the problem, I'm sure there are hundreds of problems with what I've said. The other thing why it's important and why physical needs to be the case is parents want that 1 hour of free time just to do their chores and like whatever they want to do, right? If it's at home, if it's, you know, online classes, the father or the mother or somebody has to be involved and make sure that the kid is doing the right thing, right? So that's another angle. But now that you've sort of poked me on like trying to ask me how will this work, in my head, I have this grand plan of how education needs to change, right? In my mind, all the academic education that we are doing should be done independently. That shouldn't be done in a classroom setting, because every kid is different in terms of their curiosities and their interests and whatnot. So academic curriculums should not be similar for different people. That should be done online. And in the evenings, the community programs, the community stuff, the extracurricular stuff, that needs to happen together. So I am thinking of the way I'm thinking about this is homeschooling. Homeschooling paired with extracurricular activities, giant venture capital funded company that has hundreds of millions of dollars to burn through to actually create these community centers and whatnot and all of these things. But do homeschooling physically at home, whatever, and then extracurricular activities outside in community centers. Physically.
Siddharth, where did you start and where did you end up?
Because this is my grand plan. This is my grand plan of like extracurricular activities should be done with the community. The academics should not be done with like 30, 40 different other students.
So when are you raising funds for this?
That's the only reason why I'm not doing this.
Okay, I have a question. Because when I was a kid, we used to have summer camps. I'm asking about this because you mentioned summer camps, Siddharth. And this summer camps were always just 1 week long or 2 weeks long. It was never more than that. And I have friends in the US, and I have some friends who run summer camps in the US. And those summer camps are like 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks long. And that gives the parents a huge break, first of all. And secondly, it gives the kids a lot of bonding. They do a lot of outdoor activities. They learn a lot, etc., etc. My question is, why are there no... Now, I don't know. I was a kid 20 years ago. I have no idea if this is still the same today. I don't know if kids go for summer camps nowadays. But why are there not long summer camps in India? Like, do parents not want to let go of their kids for so long?
I think I the simple answer to that is, like, you need to see how the family structures are in India, right? There's a work at, you know, it's like stay-at-home mom for like 90%, 95% of the Indian household, right? And when you have a person that is dedicatedly just looking after the child, right? What happens when, you know, the child goes out, say, for 4 weeks or 6 weeks? I think that's something that is changing, and I'm for good, right? I'm a big proponent of everyone just needing to be out there. But, you know, if I'm a person that is staying at home just for looking after my child, I wouldn't want to put that child away for 4 weeks or something.
Okay, I'm going to push back on this. One problem that I have with Indian kids is that we are too coddled.
Too sheltered, way too sheltered.
Even me, when I was a kid, I was very naive. I was very sheltered. And my parents threw me out into the world very suddenly at the age of 15. They forced me to live abroad by myself for a year. It's not as bad as it sounds, but it really challenged me and it made me change a lot. So in the same way, like, if you're able to give kids much bigger challenges at a younger age, you know, 10 years old, 12 years old, doing a summer camp for 4, 6, 8 weeks without their parents, I feel like we'll make stronger kids that way.
No, I am not defying the advantages of it. I'm just saying why it doesn't happen in the first
place. I agree with you. I knew that was going to be the answer, but yeah.
Yeah, I agree, right? I think one thing that I tell to every kid that is in school right now is just go to and stay in a hostel. Like, don't stay at home and attend college like a day scholar, whatever that is. I'm telling you, and this is a very strong opinion that I hold, that people that stay in their homes, at their homes, and attend college, and people that stay at a hostel and attend a college, just by virtue of not staying at home, right, they advance a couple of years ahead from their counterparts, and that's
not just a couple of years. It's life changing, right? It's just game changing completely, because you're out of that home sort of sheltered environment at that age of 17, 18. You're going through a major transformation as a human being. And at that point, if you learn how to live independently, you can survive a lot of difficult situations.
There was an interesting conversation that I had with a friend, you know, who comes from a very well, rich background, right? And we were having a conversation, and he said one thing which stuck with me for a long time. When I was back at home, you know, there were some things that we used to do very periodically. Ki har Friday movie dekhni jaani hi hai. Har hafte ek baar bahar khana hi hai. And all of this, I felt that everyone does it. Right. And did not count for the fact that I probably come from a privileged class of people. And when I came to hostel, right, and then suddenly changed, right? Everyone, few people thinking about 100 rupees and few dozen even thinking about 1,000 rupees. I think that changed a lot of perspective about how people behave and why people behave a certain way. And I took things for granted, and I cannot take that them now. I think that's a very one example of how perspectives change while staying in hostel.
Just to add, when you're a day scholar in a college, you're getting the worst product that the college has to offer, which is the academics.
Exactly.
And you're leaving everything else, which is the best part about college, which is just the personality development, figuring out how people operate, just forming, building friend groups and whatnot. All of that is taken away.
Yeah. What you just said, Rishabh, about seeing how other people live. All of us come from a privileged class. Same with my wife. And my wife went to NID in Ahmedabad. And the thing with NID is that they try their best, or at least they used to take people from all over the country. So there were many people from Northeast India. There were many people from tiny, tiny, tiny villages. Like one of our best friends from college, he grew up in a tiny village in Madhya Pradesh. I think it was called Indore. No, joking. It was an actually small village in Madhya Pradesh. And what she learned from that is that the way people in the villages, or the way people in small towns in India, the way they think, they're extremely intelligent. They might not speak English, but they're still extremely intelligent. And the way they think is very different from us city folk. And I think exposing yourself to that, exposing yourself to new ideas, new ways of thinking, the only thing you can do is make you a better person in the long run. I don't know what bloody business idea is coming out of this now. We're just kind of ranting. But the point is, I think long summer camps, I think there should be in India 4-week, 6-week, 8-week long summer camps. Secondly, cult fit for extracurriculars or something like that. And lastly, we all love to rant.
Yeah, the last idea was just us ranting about how you should sort of go to college and just go outside of home when you're going to college. But the broader theme...
All of us who don't have kids are telling people how to raise their kids.
I mean, we've done that with dating apps. It's only fair. We also do it with kids. So yeah, thank you so much, Rishabh. Thank you so much for taking the time out. I know it's busy days, given how fast you guys are raising Pepper content, how fast you guys are growing Pepper content. So thank you for taking time out. It was lovely chatting about different business ideas, and hopefully some of them, or all of them, or at least the tap room beer delivery comes
right
to life.
And thank you guys. You know, I think love this conversation. You know, I love people that do these conversations, just not just for the sake of it, but actually have fun doing it. You know, and that's why as soon as I visit, I was like, this is something I would love to do. You know, I think that thank you for this lovely conversation.